this contact friend of mine, he was on a lumberjack and a river rat, and always talking about corking up and how good they'd be on that snow, of course. Yeah, we know it don't work, but well-corked boots the worst thing you can have on snow. But I got to calling him Corch. Well, he had an idea. The Wood River. If we just go over into the Wood River. And half the money that he'd won anyhow was mine because he just wouldn't have had it if it hadn't been for me. So we finally decided to go to the Wood River. Well, in all my life, I've never seen a man on snowshoes like that guy was. He's the first man ever I seen that could turn around in his tracks. What I mean, he'd kick his right foot up, the heel of his shoe would move out in front of him, and then he'd turn his foot right quick and light the shoe right beside of the other, but it'd be pointed in the opposite direction. Then he'd lift his razor, left foot, give it a little jerk, strike the side of his snowshoe on the calf of his leg. That snowshoe would spin, and he'd set it down right beside of the other one, and he'd be facing the other way, just one track off. I got so I could do it pretty good myself, but it took me quite a while. It's a pretty clever stunt. But anyhow, he would just pound along on those snowshoes all day, wear me and the dogs both out. Of course, we had a load, but we was trying to make it all in one trip, and we did. But he had a snowshoe out ahead, just them legs are going like piston rods. Get ahead of me and turn around and come back to give the dog a bear's trail. Boy, he liked those dogs. But finally we got to the Wood River. I think we was about 250 miles from Fairbanks and made a good camp. Here's where we was going to make the big steak. And one morning he was standing around and had some glasses, and up on the mountain he spied a sheep, and we must go up and get a sheep. Well, I'd never eat sheep. I'd seen them in the Rockies, but I'd never eat one. And these were white, of course. These were the dog. So we snowshoed as far as we got to the mountain, about 3 or 4 miles above camp, and then we took straight up the mountain and left our snowshoe. Well, that game in there had never been shot at, of course, and probably never seen a man. Wasn't afraid. So we had no trouble getting us a nice little lamb. Dragging him back down the mountain, we got to our snowshoes, and he was dragging the sheep. And he drug it up onto his snowshoe, and one of its horns caught in his snowshoe and throwed him. And he lit with his leg across a rock and broke it. Boy, that was something. Well, I got him to a tree, probably 50, 60 yards. I cut the limbs off so he'd have a nice dry place and build him a fire. Then we went to work of bandaging up that leg. Well, you could feel a ridge where the bone was broke. And he insisted that I push that back. Well, Lord, that hurt me worse than did him, I believe, because he just didn't seem to mind it at all. But I gripped that thing and shoved it back until it felt smooth. Then we must put splints on. Well, he had seen that done. He knew a little about it. And I knew a lot less, of course, but I had seen. So we went to work. We tore our parkie tails off, clear to our waist in strips about 3 inches wide, got them fixed up nice to start the work. We'd cut willows, or I would, and split them, and then he'd sit there in the whittle on them splints. We'd whittle them down, layers about a quarter of an inch thick, and we got a plenty of them, and I started to wrap them. Well, that was the time that we left his sock and his underwear on, but we cut his pants leg and rolled it way up and had the splints clear to his hip so he couldn't move the leg at all from the hip down. And we wrapped and wrapped and re-wrapped and finally got the darn thing, so we just decided that he's all right. And it was, of course, proved afterwards. But it'd begin to get dark, and I figured I'd go to camp and get the sled 3 or 4 miles. And so I built him up a good fire out of some big logs. him with his leg braced up on a snowshoe, and he was not complaining at all. I asked him, no, no, it don't hurt. He's lying, I know, but then it's all right. And I started to camp. Well, I never thought of a gun. It was dark. You know, only the north can get dark like that. In the shadow, it looks awfully dark. The mountains away looks clear. But close to you, it's kind of like you had a veil on or something. You just can't explain it. But that's the way it was that evening. And when I got into camp, mister, there was the worst mess I ever got into in my life. Wolves had come down and killed every dog I had. They had just wrecked the tent in their fight. They had even pulled the dogs right out of their collar. Well, of course, I'd noticed them wolf tracks, and they was about three times as big as my dog tracks. And my dogs weighed about 90 pound average. I had a big team, but I knew them wolves must be terrific. But, of course, I found out later they weighed as much as 200 pounds. But I knew they were big, and I'd been reading these stories about wolves like they used to write so much, you know, wolf kill somebody every day. And I didn't know anything about wolves, so, boy, when I run into that, it just scared me stiff. I got hold of my axe and backed up against a tree, and I just decided I'd sell that life of mine for all it's worth. I'd get just as many of them wolves as I could before they got me. I didn't know how many would have, no idea. Of course, my picture was 100. That's what they tell in the stories. I imagine it was probably 6 or 7. But anyhow, I stood at bay there for a while, looking the situation over, and I thought of my partner. There he was up there, and the gun was with the sheep, and the sheep was, 50, 60 yards from him, and his leg broke, he couldn't get to him. The sheep's blood would attract the wolves, and they'd follow that scent down off the mountain, and they'd sure eat him up before I got back. Well, I got busy, and I unhooked the harness from the sled, and I put myself on a neck rope, and I started back. I sure didn't lose no time. I just plowed snow. Well, when I come up to him, he looked up and he said, "What's the matter?" He says, "You look like you'd seen a ghost." Well, by gee, I felt like I'd seen a ghost too. But I told him all about it. He didn't say much about it at the time. But I finally wiggled and got him on the sled and drug him back to camp. Well, when he got into camp, he just about went into hysterics. He did love those dogs, and they loved him. They had learned to just think an awful lot more than they did me, I believe. But he would just play with them dogs, and the thing you shouldn't do, of course, with a work dog, but we was green. And at night, when we was on the trail, why, he would make them all a nice spruce bough bed. Well, of course, they'd rather eat snow than drink water, but Clark didn't know that, so he would get them some water and take each one of them around to drink, take it around to each dog, and some of them lap a little, some wouldn't pay no attention to it. But boy, he loved those dogs, and the way he went into the air. And, of course, we had both the rifles and both of them ready by that time. And so he sat and watched me. He wanted to help me. There the camp was a mess, and there had to be something done. So we started to build a cache. Well, I climbed a tree about 10 feet and cut the top off so it wouldn't sway. There was two smaller trees beside of that, so we built a frame around that and lashed our poles to the trees and then laid smaller ones across. Well, as I climbed the tree, I left limbs on so I could climb. It'd be like a ladder. And we had to cut another tree down close to it so the squirrel or what have you wouldn't jump into our cache. We had it all cache built up in good shape. And then I started to climb in that tree with a load on my back, getting our stuff up. I'd tie a rope to a sack of flour or whatever it was, and I'd take something else on my back and climb onto that cache. And then I'd pull up the rope, so I'd make two trips of one. He wanted me to bring all the stuff over and drag him over so he could tie it on. But I didn't want him to do any monkeying around of that leg. So I just left him where he was. Well, anyhow, but the last thing we put on was our dog harness. Boy, that I hated that. That just pile them dog harness. is up there on top of that doggone dog. He kind of made me feel sick, and him too, far as that's concerned. Well, anyhow, it was good daylight when I got that thing done, and I was just so tired. Went up on the mountain, and all that work, I was just wore completely out. That's all it was. And he suggested I'd better take a sleep. That he swore he'd slept some that night, but I know he lied to me because he sat there with that rifle all night. And he suggested that I'd better take a sleep. We wanted to get out of there. I wanted to hook on to him and drag him out right now. No, he said, you better sleep. So I slept about 4 hours, I imagine. It must have been about noon. We got up and got ourselves something to eat. Now, I must have had about 250 pounds on that sled, maybe more. I had laid a canvas down and put his wolfskin robe under on top of the canvas and my rabbit skin robe. So I had him wrapped up so it'd keep an icicle warm. I wasn't worrying about him at all. I was sleeping, aimed to sleep beside the fire, of course, on the trip, with a little canvas. Well, anyhow, about noon, we pulled out, and boy, that's where my naked and Valdez come in handy, because that was a load of 12-foot sled, or 12-foot 6 inches to be exact. We had a fairly good trail going back because the wind hadn't blown, but very little, a few places, and it hadn't snowed any, so we had most of places a fairly good trail. But I'm telling you, for the next 15 days, I just like to kill myself getting him in. Well, we got him in, got him to his cabin, and I went uptown looking for a doctor. I found one. No, he wasn't a doctor. He was had been an intern, so I've understood. And he got that far, and the stampede come on, and he just forgot the doctor and went north after the million. Well, he looked the leg over and unbound some of it and examined it and decided he couldn't do anything better, that we'd done a good job, and let it go at that. Well, by this time, Clark had got so he could get up and on his crutches. We fixed him some crutches, get around a little bit. So I left him then and went on after with Silent Smith or Wendy Smith to... No. Dick, I'm getting these stories sometimes 4 or 5 years separated, but I believe we can get that straightened out when we get together. But I told you the story about being out killing moose and freezing to death, but I don't think I ever finished it out. Now, the fellas that is out with me had got a couple of moose, and of course I hadn't got any. But that's what we was after, was moose. Well, coming in, we had a break about 25 miles of trail, I believe I told you that. But we left a man in a cabin. We stopped when he was to come out. He insisted on us stopping with him and coming back. He was a great big brute of a man, but an awful nice fella. He was just a dandy. Pretty well-educated man, a Norwegian, I think. But you could hardly tell it. Talk a little bit broken. But there was a freshwater stream, one of those that don't thaw, right out in front of his cabin. And he was nicely fixed up and just insisted on a stop. And everybody's out there, they're lonesome. Well, the next 2 or 3 days, I loaded on about 1,000 pounds of moose. More than I should have, of course, with that one